Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you tonight?
Great, Chris, and I hope you're doing well. You've had an eventful week. We're going to talk about that real soon. After we talk about that in our Checks and Rec segment, we're going to talk to a great guest this week. We're going to talk to Kelly Thompson, who is going to discuss, among other things, the new Ghostbusters series that she's going to be writing that got announced at San Diego Comic-Con. And that is very excited. I am super into seeing that what that's all about. It's the first comics project based on last year's Ghostbusters movie with those characters. And it's very exciting, and we'll talk to her about getting the character voices down and more stuff like that.
Also, probably going to talk a lot about Thor.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah.
Just so you guys have a heads up on what we're doing on this big, big episode of War Rocket Ajax.
That's the other stuff I was alluding to.
There's a lot of it, Matt. There's a lot of it. But it's going to be good. But let me tell you, we have too much show to dilly-dally. So let's get into it.
Yes, let's do that indeed. Starting with thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. Now these, I believe, tell me if I've got this right, these are the people who have packed their bags up and moved to 123 Gimmick Street. They have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they have chipped in as little as a dollar every month to, in a very literal sense, help us keep doing the show and help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
First up, we have Hunter Rasmussen.
Oh, thank you, Hunter. That is a name I recognize.
James Marcucci.
Thank you, James.
And listen to this great name, Andrew Power.
Oh, that's good. That's very good.
What a good name. Thank you, Andrew. And here's a name.
Are you sure that's not an organization that's like dedicated to like to uplifting the cause of Andrews?
You never know. And finally, here's a name we'll recognize. David Wolkin.
Hey, my guy David Wolkin. Thank you.
Those are some folks who went over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. And as Chris said, kicked in as little as $1 a month. People who help us out on Patreon get cool stuff, like ad-free episodes of this show and the other podcasts that we do here at Clytus Media. They also get bonus audio. They get art that only patrons get to see. Lots of cool stuff that nobody but patrons get. That sounds
Somebody literally asked last week, they were like, hey, you had wizards at your wedding? Am I missing something? It's like, yeah, my man, you're missing the explanation of the wizards at my wedding that was a Patreon-exclusive bit of bonus content about how Matt magicked up my my nuptials.
Yeah, and all of that bonus audio, if you pledge at the bonus audio level, you get everything we've ever done and put up as bonus audio, including my wife Marlene's taste test of Do S.A.
Oh, I didn't know that was up there. Okay, yeah, yeah, that's going to be good stuff.
All right, Chris, now that we have thanked our newest Patreon supporters, let's do some checks and recs.
Let's do it.
Chris, what are you checking in with?
Matt, I had a big week.
Yes, you did.
I journeyed out of my native land, my native region. Matt, I left the South, which you know is always trouble for a boy like me.
Yeah, you get up to trouble when you go places.
Yeah, my accent thickens up. It's real bad. No, I went to Minneapolis. Last week was Aiden's birthday, and some of her relatives didn't get to come down to celebrate our wedding. So we went up and had sort of a combined birthday party for Aiden, wedding party for us, and spent a week up in Minneapolis and had a lot of fun. And I did a lot of stuff. I did some stuff specifically so that I would have things to talk about on this show. Like when we were driving past a billboard for an establishment called Leather and Lattes, I was like, well, that can't be what it sounds like. And Aiden said, does it sound like a BDSM-themed coffee shop? Because it is. And Matt, I said, okay, we're going. So, after dinner with friends, I brought this up, and people were into checking it out. I was expecting the perky pervert from Akewood.
Sure.
I was expecting that I would be able to get a latte stirred with a marital aid of some kind. That was not the case, actually. What it was it was just like, it turned out to just be like a sober space for the Minneapolis kink community that also was a coffee shop and had like some interesting stuff about the history of leather culture in the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
And some stuff for sale. This is very much a Garfield Con situation for me. I was not going to make fun of everybody, but you don't often see a BDSM leather daddy themed coffee shop. And when you do, if you're me, you say yes to life.
Certainly, certainly.
And you go. I will say it was a very, very pleasant atmosphere. They didn't even have, like, clever names for the drinks, though, and I feel like that's a big missed opportunity. Give me something.
Is it near a bar for the BDSM?
Well, I mean, it's Minneapolis, so there's bars literally everywhere.
Well, I just, you know, that seems like a bar thing to have the funny names for drinks. At a coffee shop,
maybe.
You just want a straightforward latte situation. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there was a diner that I went to in Minneapolis that I think I might have mentioned on the show before last time that had alcoholic milkshakes with names like the Yas Queen.
Okay.
And like one of them was literally like, well, it wasn't literally like yes daddy, but it was something like that. I wish I could remember a little better. That was my experience there. It was a perfectly pleasant environment. The coffee was genuinely terrible. Like, I passed around this cup of coffee to the people I was with, being like, please try this. It's the worst. So I am one of those people. Another thing that happened where I said yes to life was there was a dog parade.
Certainly, certainly.
Yeah.
You gotta go to the dog parade.
Yeah, now I am not like a man of dogs, generally speaking. And I know, Matt, your favorite animal is cats named Harrison.
Yes, I'm partial to cats with the name Harrison.
Yeah, specific, very specific. But you're a dog fan. It turns out that I enjoy seeing dogs in a setting where I don't have to provide care for them. It's great. When I'm just hanging out and there's dogs there and I get to be like, what's this dog's name? It's delightful.
So you're saying you would love one of those like dog cafes?
I don't know if I would enjoy that, cause I don't know if I would like eating around a dog. I am still very allergic.
Right.
But, I certainly enjoyed being outside and having the dog parade go on. One thing I will say is everybody gave their dog the wrong name. Cause as we know, Matt, and you really need to listen to this if you do not know this already. It's something Matt and I know. The best name for a dog is a food name. Like, the name of a food is okay. The best possible name for a dog. If I get a dog, which I probably will because Aiden loves dogs, its name will be Biscuit.
That is a good dog name, yes.
It's a great dog name. It's the best dog name, which is why I'm going to use it. I mean, you know me, Matt. Only the best. For me.
Sure.
But like Waffles, Sausage is a great dog name. Creme Brulee? Oh, Creme Brulee is a great dog name. Like, think of a food and then imagine calling a dog that. And that's where you need to be at. You need to get on my level. It's 2017 with this. So, dog parade. A thing that happened at the dog parade, costumes were encouraged. And, so there were some great dog costumes. There was a dog dressed up as Batman with a child dressed up as Robin. Or no, sorry. Child was dressed up as Batman. Dog was dressed up as Robin. It was great. There was also a family of people all dressed like pirates, and the dog did not appear to be wearing a costume. And I was like, man, they like heard that costumes were encouraged, but apparently they didn't get the memo that it was for dogs. No, Matt, the dog only had one eye, so the family dressed as pirates in solidarity with their dog. And yeah, I might have started crying just a little bit.
I mean, that is beautiful.
Oh, and then we had the big party. And the party was amazing. A lot of Aiden's friends from the Twin Cities came over, and we got to hang out. Chris Rowling, of course, was a fixture all weekend. He's a super good dude. Aaron Hunter was there. She's great, of course. If you were at the wedding, which not an insignificant number of you were. but also friends and family gave us some wedding presents. And one particular set of family friends, they might have actually even been family, but, you know, extended families I have trouble keeping track of, gave Aiden a stone statue of an owl because they remembered when she was a little girl, when she turned 11, and she didn't get her owl from Hogwarts, that she was very, very upset by that. Which is such a great, cool present to give someone, an adult. You know, this little art object from someone who's known you since you were a little kid, that was super amazing. And the thing they gave to me, Matt, was a 200-year-old comic book.
Yowza.
Yeah, it is a Japanese woodblock-printed illustrated children's book that looks like a prototype, like Tankobon. It's obviously not that thick, but it was, you know, it's a children's picture book. And I opened it up and I was like, oh my god, it's a comic. And it is from, 1850.
Where did they find that?
They are antiques dealers.
Aha.
Yeah. So they really gave us, we got so many incredible things from so many people. But those were super standouts. And there was one more little section of my journey, but I'm going to save that for the recommendations section.
Chris, we're going to skip my check anyway because I'm not doing anything. What am I doing? I'm out here mowing grass.
Oh, homeowner life.
Whoa. Hello.
That's you. Always like, whoa.
That's me every day.
Every day you're just like, oh my god! So wait, is that you or David Lee Roth? That might be DLR.
That's that kid from Troll 2. Alright, so we're skipping my check. So we're just going to go right into Rex. So Chris, you can talk about that. What you were just mentioning.
One of the other things that I did while I was in Minneapolis, Matt, is me and Aiden and Chris and Aaron all went to go see NXT Wrestling Live. The reason this is my recommendation is it is probably top to bottom the best wrestling show I've been to in a year. Maybe since Trios, probably, at least. It was really super fun. There were at least two really standout matches. We got to see Cassius Ohno versus Hideo Itami, where Hideo Itami was doing just classic heel stuff. That was wonderful, because that is not, a thing. You do not expect Hideo Itami to, do Ric Flair shit, which was great.
Was he doing, flops?
No, but he was definitely doing the, you know, he wasn't, he was backing away from the fight.
I see.
Classic heel stuff.
Yeah, they're turning him heel on the TV show.
Yes.
Gradually, so.
But Matt, there was a missing turnbuckle that played into the end of that match.
Wonderful.
Missing turnbuckle pad. And then the main event was a NXT championship match between Bobby Roode and Roderick Strong. Both of whom are wrestlers that 3 years ago I would not have cared about. It's obviously seen Bobby Roode in TNA. Roderick Strong is just I thought he was just kind of a boring Ring of Honor guy. But they put on a hell of a barn burner. Honestly, it made me think of Roderick Strong in terms of Dean Malenko, where he's not someone I care about necessarily from like the promos and vignettes they've been doing, but he got in that ring and was quite enjoyable. And Bobby Roode is, you know, he's glorious. Everybody sang along to his theme song, which was very fun. There is a thing people are doing in wrestling crowds now where they count the two count, and then when they say two, they follow it up with a sweet.
Yeah.
Which is, I do not like that one. That's not what I'm a fan of.
Wait, you came here to see WCW?
Matt, I did. I did come here to see WCW. You know I'm in the Union of Diamond Cutters. The Diamond Dallas Page fan club that existed in 1997.
Yeah, well, there are certain things, and this may be going off on a little bit of a tangent, but there are certain things that I have noticed wrestling crowds doing lately that are very much the saying so good in Sweet Caroline of wrestling. Too sweet is one of them on a two count. Another one is like every time it's this contest is scheduled for one fall.
One fall, just I hate it.
Repeating one fall. Like, that's a thing?
Not a fan.
Yeah. I get too sweet. I don't get the one fall thing at all.
I don't, like, not into it. Not into it. But I will say the crowd was good. You know, I've talked before. I love live wrestling. I cannot stand live wrestling crowds, but this was a solid crowd. Hilariously, no one could keep the rhythm of the chants straight. Like they would completely disintegrate on the third repetition of the chant. Like it's gone. And Aiden and Chris Rowling both insisted it was because of the acoustics in the building we were in. And I was like, no, I'm literally watching the clapping happen and it's just dissolving. But it was very, very fun. And I've seen two NXT live shows. And the first one, we dipped out early because the crowd was terrible. And once we had seen Shinsuke Nakamura, like, what's the point? But this one, we stayed all the way to the end, and they do a really cool thing where they turn off all the house lights except the ones right on the ring for the main event. And I hate the phrase big fight feel, but I love when they try and do it. If NXT comes to your town, go see them. It was a super, super fun, super great night of wrestling. Matt, what is your recommendation?
Well, I just wanted to talk about my experience this week of going to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I don't know if it's, you know, really that I'm recommending the movie, even though I enjoyed the movie a lot, but it's basically out of theaters now. And the way I ended up going to see it was by going to what is essentially Asheville's cheap theater, the second-run theater in town, which just happens to be inside a pizza restaurant and brewery. What could be more Asheville?
Yeah, like, you didn't have to say it was inside a brewery. I mean, it's a building in Asheville, so I assumed.
Yeah, right. So, Asheville Pizza and Brewing is also a movie theater, and they have second-run movies, and I basically promised myself that as soon as Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was there, I'd go see it there. And I've kind of come to the conclusion, after this experience and after several others, that I should just go see every movie at this theater because nobody was annoying. The audience is, every time I've ever been there, the audience is great. They pay attention to the movie. They laugh when they're supposed to laugh. They don't annoyingly applaud. Like, they don't do any of the stuff that annoying movie theater audiences do. And because you're in a pizza restaurant, if there is noise, you can forgive it. Because you're in a restaurant. So, like, if somebody's ordering something, or, I mean, like, the movie theater part is a movie theater with movie theater seats. So there's not, like, servers coming around, like, taking orders and stuff. But there's, like, an area in the back where you order food or whatever. And like, you know, people have glasses and plates and stuff. So there's going to be a little bit of noise, but you can forgive it more than, like, in a regular movie theater. But the great thing about it is, instead of movie theater drinks and food, you're getting restaurant food at that restaurant's prices. So I got an order of wings that were like $6. And beer, that like a $2.50 beer, because they had a beer special that night, plus a cherry Coke that was like $2, plus popcorn that was $1.50. Like, why do I go see movies at places where I don't get real food and where I have to deal with annoying people instead of going to this pizza restaurant where I can eat dinner and watch a movie? That, hands down, made the experience of seeing Guardians of the Galaxy 2 better. As far as the movie itself, I tweeted about this. You can go to twitter.com, home of tweets, and see my thoughts about the movie to a degree. Basically, I had no objectivity about it because the opening credits were over the song Mr. Blue Sky by ELO. So it had won me over immediately at that point. But I did enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy 2. If you have not seen it and you want to go grab it at the Redbox or stream it on Amazon or whatever, I would absolutely recommend doing that because, like, it's as funny and breezy and enjoyable as the first one. Plot-wise, I would say it maybe lags behind the first one a little bit. Like, you don't really know where it's going until the third act. Like, there's that thing in the third act that's like, oh, here's the plot. Right? Like, yeah. Everything's in motion up to that point. But you don't know that that's the plot until it kicks in. And it sort of turns on a dime, too.
It really does.
So if I had like one big criticism of the movie, it would be that. But it was it's a fun movie. There were plenty of like fun moments. There's a line that, like, in a regular movie theater, I would have gotten annoyed because somebody in the theater repeated it immediately after it was said. But in that setting, I was better about it. But basically, something is described as being too adorable to kill. And that was delightful. And Big Dave Bautista is fucking great in that movie.
Big Dave, man. Like, he is, you know what? First of all, good for him. Who knew Big Dave was going to be, like, second only to The Rock for mainstream success?
Like,
that dude was in a Bond movie. He was Mr. Hinks.
Like, I'm willing to say that Big Dave has a better movie batting average than The Rock does.
Well, yes, because The Rock's only been in like three good movies.
Yeah, exactly. And Big Dave's been in two good movies and one stinker, but
he's been in two good movies and a James Bond, which go beyond good and evil.
I mean, that's fair. But yeah, Big Dave's so good in that movie. He's so good. Like, he's such a goofball. It's wonderful. Yeah.
There were varying opinions in this household of the joke about the kind of constant joke about Mantis with Big Dave. But
it felt a little mean spirited.
It gets to the point. It gets to the point of being really mean spirited because no one's sticking up when they probably should.
Well,
there's
like,
one instance, but
like Gamora should be like, shut up.
Yeah,
stop.
There should have been maybe a little more of that.
That maybe goes on a little too far and goes a little too far. That is a running gag that doesn't necessarily work. I will grant that much. Well, that's going to do it for our Checks and Rec segment, Chris. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
I love talking about comics with you, Matt.
DC Comics.
Detective Comics.
That's right. They're celebrating the 100th birthday of Jack Kirby in style. They're kicking that off with the New Gods special that came out this week, which I definitely enjoyed. It's a extra-sized book that has a big main story by Shane Davis, then has a young Orion story by Walt Simonson in it, and then has some reprint stuff after that. What did you think, Chris?
It's a bit of a weird one, isn't it? The fact that it's the Shane Davis story is like three times as long as the Simonson story when they both essentially have the same amount of plot is weird. And the Shane Davis one, like, it's a very kind of basic, it's an Orion story that could come out whenever, I feel like, you know? It wasn't bad. I liked it. I thought it was fun. It did a good job of, you know, bringing in Forager, who you know I love. I'm a big fan of the Forager, Matt, who's experiencing some solo title success at the moment. I couldn't shake the feeling that this just is very weird. They both felt like weird, like backups that would have been in Simonson's Orion, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I get that. I like the approach of not, if it not being just like a full on dark side story. I like the idea of focusing on Orion and focusing on Kalibak and their rivalry and Kalibak having this plan that he's going off and doing on his own to impress Darkseid. And then Orion and Kalibak have this kind of showdown. I thought the showdown between Kalibak and Orion went a little extreme. Maybe just in the way it's depicted in the art. It's like it goes real far, real fast.
It goes 0-60 pretty quick. In a way that I kind of appreciated, though, because like, I mean, look, he's fucking Orion, you know, like that dude goes hard all day, all night.
Yeah.
He's the proud New Genesis person who's ready to fight. I am 100% with you on, like, I had to take a moment and be like, okay, if this was drawn in a different style, would it be hitting me as being as extreme as it was, you know? Because it certainly feels like it in that moment.
There's a lot of blood, which feels, like, weirdly out of place. But it's not that it's exactly out of step with any, like, Kirby story, necessarily. It felt like it was very lovingly intended to honor Kirby.
Yes.
That's what I felt like through the whole thing.
I think part of my problem is that I don't think this book does anything new. Like, even the Simonson story, the Simonson story actually even plays with something kind of interesting, you know, the Unholy Sea, which is a new idea, like at least a new concept for the story. But the main story didn't. It didn't bring anything to the table. And it's, you know, on the one hand, it's fucking Jack Kirby's birthday. You know, it's not your party. You don't want anybody going in thinking you know better. When you're paying tribute to Jack Kirby. On the other hand, I feel like that's the best way to honor Kirby, right? Is to do, like, to take his stuff and do something kind of new and cool with it.
But this is a one-time special, a one-shot special that is totally just a Kirby homage thing. It's not the start of a new God series.
Totally.
But I agree with the sentiment that if you were really gonna honor Jack Kirby, you would do a new thing.
Yeah.
But I think as a general kind of homage to Kirby, like we're gonna do something that honors him in his style, I don't think this is a bad version of that.
No, I don't think it's bad by any means. It's perfectly fine and very enjoyable, even, I'd say.
One other comic we were going to talk about is a new book from Boom called Mech Cadet U, number one, written by Greg Pak. I liked this book a bunch.
Yes. We should say it's written by Greg Pak, art by Takeshi Miyazawa, who, if you don't recognize them as a team, they, among other things, are the creators of Amadeus Cho together.
They're the creators of Amadeus Cho together. You might remember Miyazawa from some work on Runaways.
Yeah, they did. They did some of the Jonathan Coulton stuff. Was a collaboration between those two.
The Toad book. Yeah.
Yeah. Pak obviously is like one of our favorites here on War Rocket Ajax, but Miyazawa I think is like super underrated. He's so good.
He's super good, and he's particularly good on this book. I feel like this is an exemplifies a leveling up for him. Like the art is so expressive, and the mechs in it, the robots, the giant robots from space, have personality to them instantly.
Yes.
Like the way that they're designed, like the one that is going to be kind of our lead mech, the one who ends up encountering our lead character, has this just like instant connectability. The design of it is like kind of instantly like more relatable than the other mechs. Like it's less fussy looking. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of more stripped down, more humble, I guess you would say, because the whole conceit of this book, it's all about the sort of social hierarchy in this particular society that's all based around this kind of military academy where mechs come from space. They choose certain cadets to team up with. The cadets who become the ones who pilot mechs are like at the top of the hierarchy. They're the most important people in this particular setting. And our lead character is a kid who is basically a custodian. Like, he's working.
Yeah, he's a janitor.
Yeah. So, you know, the hierarchy gets upended a little bit in the first issue.
I think it's fair to say there's a little bit of Pacific Rim in this. There's a little bit of Ultraman in this. A lot of bit of Ultraman in this. A little bit of kind of school drama stuff. A little bit of shonen manga in it. And that's stuff that all really works together in this book. You kind of know, or at least you think you know exactly what's the, you know, a little bit of Iron Giant in it too.
Oh, for sure.
You think you know what's going to happen, like full on. You're like, oh, this is going to be good, but I know exactly what this story is. And then there's something that happens on the last page where you're like, oh, okay, well that's different. That's that's yeah. fun.
Yeah. It seems like the conflict, at least to start, is going to be internal before it becomes external.
Yeah, and there's going to be some really interesting stuff. I think
that's going to be something to see. I'm excited. I'm very excited for this book. Like I said, I'm a sucker for that kind of like social hierarchy sort of stuff, like science fiction that deals with a social hierarchy. So. I'm super pumped. The art in this is so good. And it's the story is exactly like you said. You kind of think it's going to be exactly what it seems, and then it's kind of is, kind of isn't.
Yeah. It's a good twist.
Yeah. All right, Chris. That's going to do it for our comic segment this time out. Let's talk to Kelly Thompson about some Ghostbusters and also Thor.
Joining us for the program this week is a friend of the show that we're always delighted to have on when she's got a few minutes to talk to us. You'll know her from Gem and the Holograms, from Hawkeye, from her books like Story Killer, and from the just announced Ghostbusters Answer the Call, the new 5-issue miniseries coming out from IDW very soon. Kelly Thompson is here. Kelly, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Now, Kelly, normally, at the start of the interview, I like to do a bit to kind of, you know, really get everybody on the same page with all the fun we like to have on the show. But there is one question that I think needs to be asked about your upcoming Ghostbusters book.
Okay.
How much of that Kevin content are we getting?
I mean, if it's up to me, there will be so much Kevin. Like, I mean, you know, he works best as a certain role, so you don't want to upgrade him too high or else I feel like the bit of Kevin falls on its face. But I freaking love the Kevin bit. And let me tell you this, way back when I was supposed to be doing this, which is way longer than anyone thinks, I had written some sample pages just to get a feel for it and to show Tom, that's my editor, what I was sort of the tone I was sort of hoping to strike and like getting the voices and stuff. But I think it was like 6 to 8 pages, you know, and it was just sort of them in the lab, like goofing around kind of like stuff. And there were like 3 Kevin bits in those 8 pages. So a lot is the answer.
I've got a lot of questions about that, but like I watched that movie and it was the most frustrating thing in the world that he is that beautiful and that funny.
Why is he like that? It's ridiculous.
Yes.
It should be illegal.
It's not fair is what it is.
It should be illegal. It's wrong. And I think we can all agree he should probably be killed or something because it can't, you can't be that funny and that attractive and that sort of like self-deprecating and cool. It's just wrong. Shouldn't happen. It starts way too high if you're like that. Like what's for the rest of us? Nothing. No hope.
It's very, very upsetting. I would like to say the official stance of War Rocket Ajax is that Chris Hemsworth deserves a long and happy life.
It's also my stance. And can we just say, as a segue, how much do you guys of War Rocket Ajax love the Thor trailer that's so freaking Flash Gordon, I can't get over it. I love it.
Are you talking about Synthwave Thor? Yeah, every time we have seen that trailer, Aiden and I just turn to each other and go, that's gonna be fucking dope.
I can't believe how into it I am, because I didn't really like the second one. I was like, ugh, we're so bogged down in all this other stuff. Like, I sort of loved the first one with the sort of stranger in a strange land, Thor kind of being ridiculous and dumb and charming and, like, not getting our puny human ways and everything. And then it sort of lost all that charm in the second one for me. But this is just, like, doubling down on everything crazy. Cate Blanchett looks insane and amazing. I can't even believe how excited I am. Who knew?
Well, I'm absolutely in the same boat as you, Kelly, because like the first one, I think I like the first one more than most people.
Like, me too.
I remember liking it a lot. Yeah.
I particularly like the second act of the first Thor movie, which I think a lot of people would say is boring and doesn't have enough action, but I love the, like, Thor learns what coffee is, like, yes, moments, right?
Yes, yes, I'm totally into it.
The second one was, like, a Star Trek movie, kinda, and not a good one. Like Malekith is a Romulan, full stop, and, like, there's stuff in it that's just not great. So the fact that with this third one, the direction is so, and certainly there's like Flash Gordon in there, but I can't get beyond the Jack Kirby of it all.
Yeah.
Like the Jack Kirbiness of everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like how everyone on Sakaar looks like a fucking celestial. Cause I'm pretty fucking stoked about that.
Well, how, you know, you talked about Cate Blanchett as Hela, like I see what is on her head and I gasp. Like I can't help myself.
It's amazing.
Because that's what, right out of a comic book.
Yes. It's so often you see, like, as comic book fans, it's, you know, we grow so used to seeing these things that look so incredible on the page, and they just utterly fail to translate it even multiple times. For example, Storm's hair. Every time, except it was great in the Apocalypse one. That was fantastic. Let's have that again. They fail to do it. It looks so dumb. And you're like, how is this magnificent thing? How come the movie magic, they can't make it work? And then you have something like Hela's horns. And they're absolutely magnificent. To the point that someone said on Twitter, women should wear more horns for real. And I was just like, I can't like this enough. Well, this should be what we wear now. You know, it just looks so good. So good. Ah, I love it.
Totally changing fashion for all time.
If fashion in general could just be like 20% more Jack Kirby, I think we would all be like glad. That's a world we'd be happy to live in instead of this fallen world that we currently occupy. I feel like there's a shift because I used to have this idea and Kelly, you and I have pretty similar career paths in terms of like coming up as commentators and, you know, starting out as fans. But I feel like we all had fooled ourselves in the 90s into thinking, well, they gotta change it or else the movie audiences, they're not gonna like it if they just put this on the screen the way we want it, you know? But then Guardians of the Galaxy came out, and it's like, well, at that point, all bets are off.
Yeah, I feel like that was a real game changer for us because everyone was so skeptical. Like, why are they doing this? Nobody's going to understand this. It doesn't make sense. And they're like, no, it's cool. Let's show them. And then they fucking showed them. And then everyone was like, oh my God, it's cool. And you're like, yes, let us do more of this, please.
However, I don't know if we were too far off the mark in the 90s to say, you know, if they just took what was in the comics and put it on the screen, that the regular audiences wouldn't accept it because we weren't there yet. We didn't have the technology. And now we do. Like, because attempts to do it looked bad.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, maybe I'm not thinking about the 90s as much as I'm thinking about like Smallville, where it's like Superman had a fucking jacket and that's it, and I'll never get over that. I'll never get over the red blue blur. I'll be mad about it till my dying day. We honest to God have not talked about the Thor trailer once on this show.
You gotta rename your show then, man.
So
it's ridiculous.
Well, the floodgates are now open because you know, Scourge the Executioner is in that trailer and he's got two machine guns, and that I'm very excited.
don't you feel like a lot of what you see in that Thor trailer is... And I feel like they knew what they had in Chris Hemsworth from the beginning. They're like, oh my God, this guy, like, this is so great. But this is the movie where they're like, you know what, Chris? You just know what you're doing. Just do that. Just do it at 10. Everyone loves it. Go. And then, because it just feels like that. I mean, and it's the same thing when, like, you see those hilarious little bits about, like, Thor living with the roommate, you know, that little ad viral thing, you know, of him not being invited to go do things with the other Avengers, or the Civil War, I guess it was Captain America Civil War he wasn't in or whatever. Like, he's just into it, and it just is fun and funny, and it just is like a world you want to live in, you know? I don't know, I'm super into it. I also happen to love the short hair, because I am very firmly anti-long hair on dudes, and listen, he makes it work completely, but I like the short hair even better. I said it.
I think the humor and sort of the effortless charm that comes off of Chris Hemsworth, at least in what we've seen of this movie and certainly in that short, we can chalk a lot of that up to Taika Waititi.
I think that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah,
you're right. That's totally true. That's totally true.
Because you know, one of the criticisms of Thor, not just in his own movies before that, but in the Avengers movies and stuff, is like he could kind of be stiff sometimes, and I think that's just because of the kind of movie he was in.
Yeah,
and this is a movie from the guy who made What We Do in the Shadows, so it's gonna have a loose feel to it and be fun.
Yeah,
just work.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. You're totally right. That's like sort of top down vision that is, I don't know, it's just exciting. I'm just really excited to see it all come together, and I hope it's as great. My expectations are now officially over the point that's reasonable, so probably I'll be disappointed. This is my life. This is what happens.
Yeah. The thing that really frustrated me, because I ended up writing an article about all the Marvel movies, and so I watched in a weekend, I watched the ones I hadn't seen, which was Iron Man 3, Thor 2, Avengers 2, and Guardians 2. And that was about a week after I watched Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. I still haven't seen Guardians 2, by the way, so.
Well, listen to this episode of War Rocket Ajax for thoughts on Guardians 2.
Check out about 20 minutes ago. Or
hey, Kelly, can I just tell you, spoiler for Guardians 2, they do show Ego, and it is a big purple planet with a man face on it, and I was very happy.
That's awesome.
The thing that really got me is that the character, first of all, Thor 2 sucks. I'm sorry. It's like very, very bad.
It's not good. It's confusing. It's overly serious. It's like, I don't like it at all.
The idea of like Thor and Loki have to team up to fight a guy is like a good, like it's a logical progression from the first movie to Avengers to Thor 2. Mm-hmm. But they don't arrive at that until like 90 minutes into the movie. And I'm just like, get to it, fellas.
And the guy is nothing. Like,
Malekith is a non-entity, very frustrating because I love Malekith.
I'll hit this note anytime I'm talking about Thor 2. It is the Marvel villain problem writ large. And they've gotten better about it in the movies since Thor 2, I think because it's so glaring in Thor 2.
The other thing was that in Age of Ultron, everybody gets flattened out to one note in a really, like, kind of frustrating way.
Right.
And Thor, it just becomes like, he's a comedy meathead. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily mind Thor being a comedy meathead. I think he can be a comedy meathead sometimes. Like, it's my friend from work is kind of a comedy meathead line.
Yeah, but it has to be part of a larger tapestry.
It has to be part of a larger thing, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Is what it is. And it just doesn't feel like it in that movie. Yeah. You write comics, right, Kelly?
Who cares about that?
Well, getting back to a different movie, the Ghostbusters 2016 movie, Ghostbusters Answer the Call, Woo! As it has become known, in, I guess, DVD release. You talked about getting the voices down for those characters. Mm-hmm. And my immediate question, the immediate thing that enters my head is, which one of those voices is the hardest? Because my immediate thought would be that it would be Holtzman, because she's so idiosyncratic, because she's so kind of off the wall, because she has these like kind of, she seems to have this like obtuse way of thinking.
There's two answers to this question, because the stuff I've written has not yet been approved by Sony. So I have no problem with Holtzman as I write her. I'm going to have a problem if they're like, this isn't right. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've nailed it. I get her. I love her. She's probably my favorite. She and Patty is sort of toss up. But because I sort of love the characters that, you know, it's the same thing with I love Roxy and Jetta. It's like they sort of get to be slightly stepped to the side. They don't have to carry so much of like the exposition and the plotting. And so they get to really blossom to me and like be themselves a little bit and do more fun stuff. I'm using air quotes here to, you know, give you the full effect. But I don't know yet, we're so early in this, if Sony agrees with what I'm doing. So if they don't, then she's probably going to be the hardest because I think I had it and they don't think so. So we'll see. This is my first time ever working with them as a licensor, so I don't know how hard or easy that's going to be. Mileage really varies on that kind of thing. I think for my money, Abby and Aaron are a little harder just because they end up falling into that utilitarian carry the plot on their shoulders roles, which is a little bit less fun, you know? It's the same thing that would happen in Gem a little bit with Jerrica or Shayna, where they're like nice, unassuming characters who have to help us move through the story a lot of times. And that's not as fun. And that's feels less specific to the character and more specific to, hey, I have these things I have to do and this character can handle that task kind of thing. Does any of this make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think that is maybe probably true with Aaron, with Gilbert, who is the Kristen Wiig character.
Yeah.
Because for Abby, I feel like you could just write what you think Melissa McCarthy would say.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, she's got one of my best lines ever. Well, she and Patty in the movie where she's like trying to think of things worth saving the world. And she's like, soup? And then she's like, why can't I only think of soup? And then Patty's like, salad. And then, you know, it's like, she's hilarious. I mean, they're all hilarious. I just think because she and Aaron end up set up as like the quote lead protagonists, their stuff tends to devolve more quickly into, hey, we're facilitating the plot as characters. That's what we're doing. But I agree that Aaron is the less defined as a voice. But I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, if the book was just full of outtakes, you know, outtake scenes of what I think Melissa McCarthy would do as Abby, like, she's going to be one of the characters that soars to the forefront of absolute fun. But she ends up shouldering a different role in the book, which I find less fun and therefore I get less excited about and less involved, engaged in, you know?
Well, that's something we talk about, you know, when we do our segment where we rank characters on here. It's something we have started referring to, I think, as the protagonist problem, where the protagonists kind of have to be the boring ones. They have to be the ones who sort of set the baseline. And then the characters around them can be weirder and more colorful because they don't have to shoulder that load as much, and there doesn't have to be that audience connection. That sort of, you know, they don't have to be the character that the audience like sees everything through their eyes and kind of relates to. So it's interesting to hear you express how that makes it harder.
Yeah, I mean, maybe harder is not the right word, but less fun, more boring, you know, less challenging. I mean, it's challenging in a way because as a writer, you want to hide as much of that utilitarianness of your writing as possible, right? So there's a challenge in that, but, you know, it's just not the shiny bits, which, listen, we like the shiny bits. We're animals.
One thing that you mentioned about trying to get the voices of the characters is that you wrote like an 8-page sequence.
Yeah.
Is that something that you usually do like as part of your process to write like a proof of concept like that?
So I want to say no, but there is sort of a pattern here that because I just did something similar again, which I haven't sent to the editor yet. I think there's a... I don't think I'm bad at pitching, but I do think sometimes, basically I was trying to win this pitch and it's a really big deal. And I knew they wanted to use me, so it was sort of mine to lose, but I could definitely lose it, right? And so I was having these long, laborious conversations with the editor and we just were not on the same page. Like, he wanted, and probably the publisher wanted this very specific kind of, oh, do this fun adventure thing. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. We're going to do that. But I also want to do this sort of like esoteric, bigger, more important thing that like really defines these characters. Because I went and I read all this stuff about these characters and I had already read most of it, but rereading it made me realize how the same all of it was. And I don't want to do the same thing. And if we do that thing you want from column A, it's the same. And I think we can do that, but then add to it and really, really level it up, you know? But I was just losing him. And it was like, he was about to say, okay, well, why don't you send me a revised pitch? And I go, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write the first issue and give it to you. And I was like, and I know you're not going to pay me unless I get it, unless I get the book. And I know that it's, and he was like so hesitant. He totally didn't want me to do it. I could tell. And I was like, I just think I'm losing you. And we've talked about this for 30 minutes on the phone and I've still not managed to convince you, but I can't go back now. Like, I can't go back to that old thing we were talking about before. I left that, you know, a week ago, but I want to prove to you that this idea has merit. So let me just show you, like, I'll prove it. And so I did it, and I proved it enough, I think. Like, you know, that's not the issue that's ever going to come out. I did get the pitch. We're doing it. We're still workshopping it. And I think we met in the middle on it. That script that I wrote is never going to see the light of day, but it showed him that I knew the characters, that I knew the voice, that I knew what I was doing, and that here was this other level that I wanted to introduce, and we didn't necessarily agree on all the elements yet, but that we could get there. And it just sort of gave him, I think, confidence and gave us middle ground. So I don't recommend that for anyone. Don't do that. Do not do that. It's a waste of your time. It's risky. It's a whole thing. But like, I really, really fucking wanted it, you know? And I could tell that these conversations we were having were just like total failures. So I was like, I just got to write my way out of this problem. I don't know any other way to do it, you know? But I mean, listen, I wanted Hellcat a couple of years ago. I wanted it real bad. I wanted it so bad. I could see so clearly what I wanted to do with that book that I ended up, I not only did the pitch, but then I wrote like, I don't know, most of an issue. I wrote like 15 pages of what I thought the first issue should be. And I obviously didn't get that book. Kate Leth got it. So don't do what I'm saying. Do not do what I do. Do what I say. Don't do it. It's just sometimes for me to figure it out, there's got to be this extra step. For Ghostbusters, there was, I felt like I had it. It was there in the pitch, but there was part of me that was afraid of it. Like, I'm not a science nerd. I wish I was. I would have so much more knowledge at my hands. But I was like, can I really do this? Like, inventing these gadgets and doing all this supernatural science-y talk. Like, these, I'm writing characters who are physicists and things. Can I do it? And so the pages were sort of an example for me of figuring out, like, am I really capable of doing this? Can I bring something really cool to it? And I ended up really liking them. And so I sent them to Tom and he loved them. And I don't know if they ended up going all the way up the ladder or not, because there were sort of a variety of things going on with when this book was going to happen or not. So I don't know if anyone at Sony ever saw them or anything.
So when you do something like that, like, do those pages then, are those just pages that are, they're gone now? Or are those pages that you will incorporate into the final project? Like, did those Hellcat pages ever find a home in something? Like, or is it just something that you put in, you file away, and then if you need to pick up something like that again, then you'll go back to it?
I think it's a little bit of both. In the case of the Hellcat pages, there's an old version of Hawkeye number one that actually has some of, not a lot, but some of the stuff that I did in Hellcat. But that never ended up making it in. A lot of things changed between when that was a draft and what we ended up doing. That's mostly moved to the side. I still think those pages are really fun and could work for another sort of young superhero in New York City kind of thing. So maybe they'll come back someday. For Ghostbusters, at least parts of that sample section I wrote will definitely end up in one of the issues, for sure. There's a whole bit with Jillian, like, trying out, basically testing some new device of hers that is sort of a running gag throughout another scene. And I love it. It's so good. It's so like a perfect crystallization of that character and a little bit Patty, because Patty's mostly the one engaging with her. And then Kevin just sort of saunters in and out of that scene. But like what's going on between Aaron and Abby is probably something that will completely change by the time we get to that. So parts of it will get left behind. Other parts will come. This other thing that I did, that I wrote the whole issue for, I think some of that will make it into the first issue, but not a lot. Little bits, maybe. I've done it again. This is what I'm saying. It's a really bad pattern, and you shouldn't do what I do. But I'm pitching something for Archie, and it's literally my favorite pitch I've ever done. And they don't think it works for totally legit reasons. And so they were asking me to pitch something different, similar but different. But I can't let go of this thing. It's so good. And so I ended up writing the whole first issue, and I haven't even sent it to them yet. It will probably go nowhere, but this is apparently a thing I do. Like, and some of it's like compulsive, like, you have this idea and you fall in love with it. And like, there's an element of just needing to get it out of you, you know, to like see if it has merit. If this thing that I pitched with Archie never goes anywhere, I will probably repurpose that idea into something else later, maybe something creator owned, because it's just, it's too great. I can't let it die. It's too good.
If there's an idea that you just can't let go, you kind of just have to see it through and at least try to ferry it on to bigger and better things.
Yeah.
More than just an idea.
I totally see no problem with that. I'm a big fan of, like, if you have a great thing, there's no reason you can't repurpose it into something else. That said, I have a thing that started years ago as a G.I. Joe pitch, and I loved it. And then it didn't happen, and I was like, what can this be? And then it became this other thing that I was pitching for Marvel, and it's just kept not working. And there are these elements of it that I love so much that I'm dying for someone to be like, oh, yes, I get it. Let's do it. But part of me wonders if it's just, you know, stale now, if it's just gone through too much monkeying around with it, you know, that it just doesn't pop anymore. I don't know. It's hard to know on those kind of things. Like, if you're, you know, I was talking with a writer, comic writer the other day, and he was talking about how he has a one creator owned thing that he keeps sending out and it just keeps getting kicked back. And like, maybe he's just got to let it go. And I was like, yeah, I have one of those. I was like, I just renamed it as if that's a magic thing that will change everything for it. But, you know, you never know with these things.
Kelly, let me tell you about hanging on to a G.I. Joe pitch for years and years. Because, again, we're not that different, you and I.
Well, Kelly, there's one thing I feel like I have to ask before we move into Twitter questions about the Ghostbusters book. And you talking about the kind of scientific accuracy sort of leads me into it. It sounds like that's definitely something that you want to incorporate into the book. You want to get that sort of pseudoscience of Ghostbusters right.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if, you know, you worry about getting pushback on that, or you feel like, you know, in a book like this, where the Ghostbusters movie was a way for people to express bad opinions sometimes. If you know, you're expecting a certain degree of pushback on your comic and how you're preparing for that or whether you're expecting it.
I sort of was expecting pushback, and then the announcement, people were just freaking out. I think it's the biggest Twitter announcement I've ever had. Like, the most, like, likes and retweets I've ever had was for Ghostbusters, which is amazing. I was so excited about it. Like, I think it was more than my Phasma tweet. I mean, you know, you can chalk some of that up to the way things, you know, hitting people on the right day, and maybe the way you worded your tweet was better or something. I don't know. Like, but it was a huge response, and there were a few trolls in there, but it was almost universally people who were so excited to see these women in their own books. So I should probably continue to prepare myself for the flack, but I feel like the love was so big that, I don't know, I was kind of excited by that and thought maybe it's going to not be so bad. I don't know. Hard to say.
Well, Kelly, you know we're fans, and you know we are ready for whatever you do with Ghostbusters, with G.I. Joe, with anything that you've got coming up. And you know that our listeners are big fans as well. But speaking of our listeners, I think it's time that we stop asking some questions and turn it over to our listeners on Twitter. But Matt, if people want to get in on these little chats that we have with our friends each and every week, how exactly can they go about that?
Imagine that you are a pitch in a drawer. You're a great idea.
It's literally all I imagine all the time.
You've been gestating for months, years perhaps? Just waiting for someone to see your brilliance. Who will see it and when? Have great patience. Wait for as long as it takes for you to get out there and make it. Get out there and be seen. Bought by a publisher or a movie studio or something. And then you're out there on the big stage. Everybody loves you. And then, once you're known by everyone, sign up for an account on Twitter.com. Follow the ISB, that's Chris, the Matt D. Wilson, that's me. And wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And get the call from one of us for questions for our guest, just like the ones you're about to hear for Kelly Thompson.
And then answer the call.
Very good, Chris.
2016.
The first question we have comes from Discord_Inc. on Twitter, James Fletcher, who wants to know, Kelly, what's your favorite historical haunted house?
I don't know if I've done enough research to give a great answer to that yet, but the Algonquin in New York, the Algonquin Hotel in New York City, that one's pretty cool. Like, the idea of writer's round table haunting after death, that seems right. Seems like some shit some writers would do.
Doesn't it, though?
It does. You never know when to let go.
Yeah, it's like writers being unable to move on even at the moment of their own deaths. I don't know.
Right.
Sounds fake to me.
Friend of the show, Adam P. Knave, one of the writers of The Once and Future Queen, has this question for you, Kelly. Would Hawkeye make a good Ghostbuster?
I feel like Kate would be amazing. She would at first be out of her depth, but as soon as Jillian designed her some kind of cool bow and arrow ghost trapping device, I mean, she's golden. So she would be amazing.
Xavier Files on Twitter asks what might be a loaded question. They want to know, how does it feel to be the true successor to the Fraction, Aha, Woo, etc. Hawkeye run?
I mean, I think that's definitely debatable, but it's a huge relief if some people think that, even if it's like three people. Coming after the Fraction stuff, David Aja, Annie Wu, Matt Hollingsworth, I mean, just like trembling in the shadows of gods, what they did on that book. It's one of my favorite books. It's amazing. It was one of those things where I'd been pitching Kate Bishop, this Hawkeye Investigations book, for a long time, just sort of as a naive idiot, like forgetting that then that would mean they would have to be really fucking good or I would just be just dragged through the streets, right? So it was one of those things where it was sort of approved, and it was, even though it took a long time, it was sort of approved and it was going to happen. And I suddenly was like, what am I doing? What have I done? And so I'm very lucky to have a really strong team, both my editors, Charles and Sana, and of course, Leo and Jordy. You know, they just prop me up all day long, and it's amazing. So,
yeah, Chad and I got to work with Leonardo Romero on the Damage Control story, and he was fantastic.
He's a fucking genius. Did you know he's like 23 years old?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, don't worry.
What?
Don't worry, I know.
You know, honestly, we have to put him over with Chris Hemsworth in the, that's just wrong, and we got to get rid of him. You can't be that talented at 23. It's just insane. He's so good. It drives me crazy. Oh, man.
Tales to Enrage on Twitter, our friend Greg Black asks, how many ghosts is a too many ghosts situation? One, three, ten?
One.
One is too many ghosts.
One is too many.
You know what? I would have to agree. J. Clark Farmer on Twitter, James Clark Farmer, has a BuzzFeed-style question in that he asks, which Ghostbuster are you?
Wow, I mean, I really want to be Holtzman, obviously, don't we all? I'm probably more somewhere between Abby and Patty, so one of those, depending on the day. I love Patty's sort of not being the expert. I mean, she has her things that she's expert in, but she's sort of the new guy when it comes to the equipment and the science stuff, and I sort of love that. And I'm really bad at science, so maybe Patty is the most accurate answer there.
Chris, do you know which Ghostbuster you would be?
I mean, obviously I would be Kevin.
Oh, well, okay.
Beautiful, extremely hilarious. Chris, obviously. The name works. I feel like Abby's the most high strung, right? Like Abby's the one who's mad all the time.
I feel like Aaron's the most high strung.
Well, Aaron is the most high strung.
Well, yeah. I think you and I have an Abby and Aaron thing going on.
I don't think you're wrong.
I kind of think we do. So I'm going to call this part of the question segment character corner, because we suddenly have a bunch of accounts that exist only on Twitter to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax, and they are.
Is it multiple ones now?
Yeah, yeah. For example, JJJ Bugle News, J. Jonah Jameson asks, does this city believe that I am scared of any ghosts? He's asking that as J. Jonah Jameson.
No, he ain't afraid of no ghosts.
All right. Fair enough. Stone Cold HCC has this question for us, a real chin scratcher. He asks, could Penguin beat Batman if he wasn't such a lard ass?
I don't really think weight is Penguin's problem. I think he's got plenty of other problems he should be working on.
Yeah, I think Penguin could use his size to his advantage, to be quite honest.
Well, I mean, like, does that little hot Penguin from TV, does he ever beat Batman?
Yeah, the Penguin in the Telltale Batman game, who we were referring to as Fuckable Penguin.
Yeah, we got Fuckable Jughead going because of this show, but we never got Fuckable Penguin.
It's too bad.
On Twitter.
And here's the last character question. This is from Best Teen Warlock, the Ghost of Warlock, whose avatar is the robot Warlock, not Adam Warlock. And the question is, in Warlock speak, Self wants to know if entity designate Katie Kane or Katie Kate would be Self's self-friend. I think what they're asking is, would
Hawkeye and Warlock be friends?
Yes, that's the question.
Definitely. No doubt.
Well, I'm glad.
Dude, the people who listen to this show know that I fucking hate Warlock.
You hate any character named Warlock.
They're not my faves.
Now a question from a person. BD Clark, Brian Clark, asks, will anyone from the 2016 Ghostbusters be getting cameo visits from spirit guides or neighbors who look suspiciously familiar?
Like, they mean like cameos from other Ghostbuster shows or something? Or
yeah, but, you know, like there were cameos in the movie, I guess.
Well, I mean, maybe, but I do think that a lot of the there's a series right now that's sort of uniting, sort of explaining how the Answer the Call Ghostbusters exist and the other classic Ghostbusters exist, and also sort of makes room for many worlds of Ghostbusters existing. So I think that sort of takes some of the cameo aspect out of it, but you never know.
Well, along those lines, Seth_Bingo wants to know, how extreme were the extreme Ghostbusters, and will we ever see them again?
I don't know if we'll see them en masse, but they had a Kylie was like a goth girl genius, and you can really never have enough of those. So maybe.
Kylie's actually a big part of the main book.
Yeah. Well, but wasn't she started in Extreme?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
She did. She's one of the ones that Burnham and Shunning brought over.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they know what I know. You can never have enough goth girl geniuses.
Truer words. Truer words. Greg Thalen asks, which DC superhero would you pair with Hawkeye? Or any other Marvel hero for an amalgam story. Basically, which amalgam story would you like to write?
Oh, hell yes. Hell yes.
I know people want to go to, like, Huntress and Hawkeye immediately. But, like, we so have that dynamic with Hawkeye and Hawkeye already. I'd be more interested in, like, Hawkeye and Cass Kane, Batgirl kind of thing. Especially because Cass Kane is so much more mature than Kate Bishop, and, you know, so sort of stoic and laconic, and Kate can't shut up. So I feel like that would be a sort of magical pairing there.
I'm already imagining the costume, where it would like, be a full face mask, but kind of a Hawkeye costume. Yeah, but that would be good.
We need Amalgam to come back. I'm ready. I'm ready to write it. I'm ready to write all of it. I'm ready to write Unlimited Access too. Right now. Call me.
This one, I think, is going to be our last question. This is from The Horseman on Twitter, Dave Cambrian, who asks, who would be better Ghostbusters, the holograms or the misfits?
Oh, man. That's tough. That's really tough. I mean, I feel like, you know, the holograms are so much more responsible that I feel like they're your safer bet. But I do feel like the misfits are so sort of, they're sort of like the nuclear option, right? So, I mean, I feel like they get shit done if they have to, if they're motivated. And they're pretty creative about problem solving. So, that's a tough one. I don't know. I think when you're dealing with ghosts, you want the safe option. So I'm going to go Gem and the Holograms.
That is probably the safe choice.
Also, they've got synergy, so that could probably be helpful in some way. I can't imagine how, but surely you can find a use for that.
They won't cross the streams. That's how. Kelly Thompson, it has been a delight talking to you, as it always is. Before we finish up, please let all our listeners know where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at 79 semifinalist. You can find me on Tumblr at 1979 semifinalist. And my website is the same, basically, 1979semifinalist.com.
Our guest has been Kelly Thompson. Check out, do we have a release date on Answer the Call?
I believe it's the end of October, like third week, maybe.
Perfect time.
Yeah.
For some Hans and Spookums.
Yes.
We'll check out Ghostbusters Answer the Call in October and read Hawkeye. It's really good.
Thank you. I'm trying so hard. It's like, I'm not saying I can't do better comics someday, but like Hawkeye, I'm so lucky with the team. I feel like it's the best possible comics I could do. I just want everyone to read it.
It's really good.
Thank you.
But thank you so much, Kelly.
Thanks, guys. I had a great time.
Thanks once again to Kelly Thompson for joining us. Always a delight to have her on the show. But now, Matt, we turn our attention from creators to characters as we dive once more into Panel President.
This is Panel President, the segment where our listeners send us lists of characters, and then we rank those characters from best to worst. We elect the best and impeach the worst. We actually got a new musical sting for the segment, which I did not use this time, but hopefully I will use in the near future, because it's real good. This list from Seth Finkelstein, who has a list of Batman characters for us. A lot of people are sending us these lists of kind of like not top tier Batman villains.
Okay.
So get ready for some Panel President lists along those lines. This is
Who would possibly have opinions on non top tier Batman villains, Matt?
The first person on Seth's list is Maxi Zeus.
Oh, Maxi Zeus is kind of bad.
Maximilian Zeus is his full name. Okay.
All right, look. Maxi Zeus is never as good as I want him to be, because I want him to be as good as he is on that fucking episode of Batman the Animated Series that's an homage to the Fleischer cartoon, where he has the lightning gun from the Fleischer cartoon.
Yes.
But Maxi Zeus, like, beyond that is not, like, super great.
Maxi Zeus in comics is just a weird guy who dresses like Zeus. Like, he's a weird criminal guy who has a gimmick. And that's all. That's about it.
He kind of, like, breaks the format of Batman villains, right? Because he thinks he's something that he's not. And almost every Batman villain is exactly what they purport to be. the Batman villains aren't delusional in that way, you know? Like, they certainly have some non-standard beliefs, but the Scarecrow doesn't think he's a Scarecrow. The Scarecrow is a guy who's obsessed with fear. Maxi Zeus isn't obsessed, he's delusional.
He thinks he is the god Zeus.
And he's not as good as King Tut, who has the same fucking gimmick, but is a million times better. Like, that's the problem with Maxi Zeus. He's not King Tut. Like, it took me a minute to actually realize it, but yeah, that's the deal. I wouldn't, like, throw away a comic that has Maxi Zeus in it, but I'm trying to think of, like, any comic stories where I'm like, yeah, that dude was awesome in there. Or even, like, notable. Like, he's in Arkham Asylum, but he's not, like the Morrison Arkham Asylum, but he's not, like, a key or interesting figure in Arkham Asylum, you know, which is notoriously not one of my favorite Batman stories. So I don't know. I think old Maxi is gonna rank pretty low.
How do you think he ranks against Polka Dot Man?
I mean, honestly, like, on par. Except, like, is there... I mean, I was about to say, is there a better version of the Polka Dot Man running around? But there is. And it's Crazy Quilt.
Crazy Quilt, yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess he probably ranks above Polka Dot Man?
Just above? Who we have just above Polka Dot Man is Robbie Baldwin.
Speedball's highs are certainly higher than Maxi Zeus's highs, but his lows are very much lower.
I would say he's going to go below your Speedball, even with Penance in there too.
I think that is a correct assumption. So entering the list number 231, we have Maxi Zeus.
All right, hang out there at the bottom because the next one on Seth's list is Hush, Tommy Elliot.
Oh, you're talking about Tommy Elliot?
Yep.
You talking about crime mummy? Man, he's a crime mummy.
He's not even a mummy, though. He's just a guy with bandages on.
He is certainly not a crime mummy. God, that I wish he was.
Like, you're making him sound so much better than he is.
Well, it's because I wrote that article that was called How to Talk to Your Child About Hush. Where I said, just say he's a crime mummy who works for the Riddler. Because that's 100% accurate. Here's a weird thing about Hush, Matt, that you're not going to believe.
Okay.
Hush in recent years has kind of grown on me.
He's gotten better. Like, when he's not the focus of a story, he's not bad. But here's what I'll say. Essentially, every decade has its anti-Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've talked about the player on the other side.
Yeah.
We've talked about this decade. You could argue the Court of Owls story is about an anti-Batman.
Talking about old Lincoln March.
Lincoln March. And then decades before that have had their anti-Batman.
Anti-Batman, Prometheus in the 90s.
Yeah. The anti-Batman of the 2000s was Hush. And yes. He's the worst one.
Yes, but... And look, I'm not going to rank Hush high. Hush the story, I think, is actually, believe it or not, worse than Hush the character. Because...
No, you're right. If the story is worse than the character. You're right about that.
It is exactly our kind of crazy that there's a dude who looks exactly like Bruce Wayne running around doing crimes. And everybody knows it, and everybody knows, like, oh yeah, that's Hush. He looks just like, it is known to the public that there's some fucking weirdo who had plastic surgery to look just like Bruce Wayne and is now out there doing crime. That's amazing.
The fact
that they stuck with that for so long because Hush sold so well is astonishing.
The problem is... I agree. He's the kind of character that we maybe ought to think is, like, just crazy enough. Like, the good kind. But the crimes he is made to commit and the stories in which he appears are all so inconceivably stupid.
Oh, yeah, like when he stole Catwoman's heart?
Like, when he stole
for real? Also, I don't think we mentioned this. I'm pretty sure that dude did plastic surgery on himself.
On himself. Yes.
Yeah. So that dude did plastic surgery on his own face while awake to look like Batman so that he could go do crimes.
But what you're saying about lately he's grown on you, like, lately he has been in stories where he's not been the focus.
Yes. If I see that he is, like, the actual villain of a story, it's a hard pass.
Yeah. Okay. Is he going down here around where Maxi Zeus is, where Mr. Zazz is?
Well, again, it's like we're looking at fucking Speedball, and it's like the highs are high, the lows are low, but, like, are Speedball's highs better than Hush's highs? I think they are, probably.
Definitely.
Hush's
lows are lower than Speedball's lows, to be honest.
Ooh, Penance is a hard low, Matt.
It is a hard low.
It's like if there was a dude running around to just Clark Kent, and, like, everybody was like, oh yeah, I don't know why that guy looks like Clark Kent. I mean, I guess that's fucking Cyborg Superman. Comics are so fucking crazy, Matt.
That's fucking Cyborg Superman, you're right.
Oh, let's put him with Cyborg Superman. Where's Cyborg Superman at?
Hank Henshaw?
Yeah, I'm talking about Hank Henshaw. Well, he's even lower.
Yeah, he's even lower. He's down below Lucy Lane.
Oh. If it wasn't for, like, three stories that came out in the past, you know, 2 years, I would be more than happy to put Hush down here, but I'm doubting myself. We're far enough removed from him being a going concern that I'm like, yeah, he's hilarious.
Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say he's above Mr. Zazz.
Okay.
Below Nomad.
Below Nomad? All right, that's where he goes. Hush. I forgot how stupid his fucking name was. Yeah, he should maybe be lower.
I think that's the place for him. Next up is, talking about high highs and low lows, Azrael Jean-Paul Valley.
Oh, Matt. You're talking about the Agent of the Bat.
That's who I'm talking about.
Batman 2.
That's the guy.
Yeah, you're talking about the guy who was programmed by the system? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Did you forget about the system, my man? That was his secret subliminal training that taught him how to make flamethrower gloves.
Yeah. Yeah. So he can have a fire sword.
Yeah. Do you think people can tell it's kind of the end of a long night, Matt?
Well, I mean, when you're talking about Azrael, you're going to have a real laugh party.
Did you know Azrael's solo title went for 100 issues? I'm not even looking that up right now. It's just a thing I know.
I mean,
Azrael, Agent of the Bat, ran for 100 fucking issues. Denny O'Neil loved that dude.
I mean, clearly those books sold. People were buying Azrael books.
I mean, it was the 90s.
Let me tell you the number one thing about Azrael.
Okay, I'm ready.
This is undeniable, unassailable.
He vapes? Oh, he fucks?
He do vape and he do fuck.
Okay, of everyone on this list... Do we have Hal Jordan on this list? Because I feel like Hal Jordan's the only character more likely to vape than Azrael.
I'll tie this in. Azrael has never had an aesthetically pleasing costume by any stretch. In fact, every costume he's ever had looks kind of like a vape rig. Like, his Batman costume could just be one giant fucking vape rig.
It is the vape rig of being Batman, for sure.
He's never looked good.
He got those big old chunky gloves and boots from the 90s. I love those 90s chunky boots. Those good 90s chunks.
But even, like, his later costumes that had, like, the cross on the chest, where he looked like he was in Assassin's Creed.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Those don't look good either.
Man, I don't know. I kind of love him. Matt, I kind of love him.
Azrael is kind of great He's kind of terrible great. Like, where on this list is good bad? Because that's where Azrael is.
Like, Master Pandemonium is where that is.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so right, okay, here's... we had Master Pandemonium number 182 on the list. He's right above Captain Cold.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
He's right below Sinestro, which I actually think is as wrong as that. But yeah, that's where Comet the Super Horse is. I think Azrael's got to go above Comet the Super Horse, but I don't know if he goes above Guy Gardner.
He shouldn't go above Guy Gardner. Guy Gardner is the better character with ugly costumes. Talk about Guy Gardner Warrior. Okay, I think below Guy Gardner is where Azrael.
Yeah.
Goes.
So number get your kickflip going because this is number 180 on the list is Azrael Jean-Paul Valley. Kind of love him.
Next on Seth's list is Clue Master Arthur Brown.
Oh boy, Clue Master sucks.
we talked about how Maxi Zeus is not King Tut, and Clue Master ain't the Riddler.
Yeah, there's no character who has more of a like non-union equivalent vibe about them than Clue Master. Yeah. Like there's. Batman doesn't fight two clowns, you know? Batman ain't out here on these streets fighting Jarvis Poker, the British Joker, you know? the best thing Clue Master did was give a spoiler.
Yeah.
Like, I actually really like the dynamic, because that's made, like, I feel like that's a thing they wouldn't have let anyone do with Riddler. Like, they're not going to let Riddler have a kid. It's very hard to imagine Riddler having a kid, I think. I think with Clue Master, you get, like, that's the benefit of him being, like, a weird, like, sub-existing version of a guy, is that he gets to have that story. But that just means that spoiler is good. It doesn't mean that he is any good himself. Legitimately, if you see Clue Master in a story, you're, like, now, like, in modern times... You're just counting the pages until spoiler shows up, right?
You're not waiting for a nail biter of a Clue Master Batman mystery. I'll tell you that much. Is he down here in the neighborhood with Maxi Zeus and some of these guys that we just ranked?
I mean, I think Hush? So. Like, I sorry, Matt. You made me think about Hush for a second. I mean, I think I would rather read about Cyborg Superman. I probably would rather not read about Hank Hall, though.
All right, then let's put in between Cyborg Superman and Hawk.
Yeah, that's number 246 on our list is Clue Master.
Finally on Seth's list is someone who I think people have varying opinions about. Kirk Langstrom, the Man-Bat.
Fuck Man-Bat.
Okay, yes. I understand that.
I hate him.
However, there are some cool stories with Man-Bat and Man-Bats, Ninja Man-Bats, in them.
You can't, yeah, but you can't bring up the Ninja Man-Bats, because that's like saying...
Why not?
That's, well, because they're not, because Kirk Langstrom's not a Man-Bat, not a Ninja Man-Bat. That's like saying, like, oh yeah, let's rank Cobra Viper. Like those are just foot soldiers, Matt. Like let's rank Stormtrooper from Star Wars, that cool character that everybody loves.
I mean, Ninja Man Bat. Okay, the Ninja Man Bats are, I guess, a Talia invention more than a Kirk Langstrom invention.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I got nothing for Man Bat. I mean, you know, you've known me long enough to know this about me. Man Bat is. Like, arguably my least favorite Batman villain.
Is Man-Bat the anti-Batman of the 70s, by the way?
I mean, yeah, I think so. But he doesn't work as that. You can't just do that. You can just flip the name around. That's bad.
There is also Man-Spider.
Yeah, well, okay, well, Man-Spider is worse than Man-Bat. We can agree on that. But yeah, like, I don't know why people like that's the greatest trick Neil Adams ever pulled. on this ever-expanding Earth, Matt, was making people think they liked Man-Bat. People don't like Man-Bat. They just like Neil Adams.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Like, I don't, like, I think it's even, like, bonkers that, like, On Leather Wings was, like, the first episode of Batman the Animated Series. Like, I guess Christmas with the Joker was first, maybe, but On Leather Wings was, like, the first that's not a Christmas special.
Well, On Leather Wings was the first one to air. It wasn't the first one produced.
But okay, that makes sense.
I think it aired first because it was a way, like, just a big action-y episode to kick off the show. Because that is, like, that episode is basically just one huge action set piece in the middle with a pretty easy, like, mystery story that Batman solves. But anyway.
Yeah. And even that, like, that's not even, like, the Francine Langstrom episode where she's Man-Bat is better than, like, the Kirk Langstrom episodes. I like that there's a dude who has a serum that turns him into a bat monster, but I don't like anything else about him. Like, I like that that exists in the DC universe, but I don't like... There's nothing about the character as a character that I enjoy.
Okay, so do you think he goes down here near the bottom, or do you think he... I mean, he's at the very least, you have to say he's, like... reaching up to top tier Batman villain, certainly, you know, has a better rep than, say, Cluemaster.
I mean, like, we talked about how if you read a Cluemaster story, you're not, like, excited to see Cluemaster, right?
Yeah.
But if I see Cluemaster in a story, I'm not like, fuck this. Which is exactly what I do with Man-Bat. No, and again, your opinion might be different than mine.
So you're
I'm a hardliner.
You're arguing that Man-Bat goes below Cluemaster?
I find Man-Bat to be a disincentive to me reading a comic book. Like, literally the only time I've seen Man-Bat and haven't gone, here we go, here's this asshole, is in the Morrison stuff, is when it leads directly to Ninja Man-Bats, and Kirk Langstrom is, like, in it for two pages. I am not a fan. But again, I'm a hardliner on this. Right, this is something that I have opinions about. They're pretty harsh.
I'm going to argue him up.
Okay.
At least above Mr. Zazz. I think he could probably go above Polka Dot Man. And he should probably go above Maxi Zeus, but he could go below Robbie Baldwin.
Okay. And this is only slightly me being a dick. Based on what? Like, what is your argument for this?
I would be more interested in Man-Bat in a story, certainly, than Maxi Zeus in a story.
Is there a better version of Man-Bat?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think Man-Bat is the only Man-Bat.
I mean, except for Francine, and except for the Ninja Man-Bats.
Yeah, well, yeah. But that's like legacy versions, which is a different deal.
Yeah, okay. Let's. So, do you want to put him above Penance? Or below Penance?
Right below.
Okay. So, Man-Bat in his list at 232.
That was a tough one. Thank you for sending that list in, Seth. If you would like to send in a Pen of President list, you can do so at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send listener questions. If you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. If you just want to get in touch. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, leave comments, and read show notes. That is also where you can see these lists, which should be updated soon. Go to Apple Podcasts, if you like, and leave us a review. The more positive reviews we get there, the more we are featured there, which would be good stuff for us. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you where you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net and find links to all my stuff, including Supreme Villainy, my new book. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can go over to the-isb.com. That is my homepage. And it'll have links to all the stuff that I write online and stuff that you can find in your local comic book store as well. Sword Quest number 2 and Ash vs. Army of Darkness number 2 both came out this past week. So if you want to read those, that would be awesome. I would appreciate it if you would. Particularly Sword Quest number 2, because we really start getting into the weird stuff. And honestly, also, Ash vs. Army of Darkness number 2 is where the weird stuff in that one really starts. So give those a read and check it out. You can also find me on Twitter at the ISB, Tumblr, the ISB. That's where I am and what I do. Before we get out of here, I wanted to give a nod to our good cause of the week, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You can find that at NAMI.org. And the reason I wanted to throw this out there is that I was honestly like very surprised and really flattered and touched that so many people got in touch after I talked about getting on antidepressants and going to therapy last week. We had a lot of really, really great comments from people that were very supportive and very nice. And the fact that that took me by surprise made me realize that there is still a lot of stigma around talking about mental illness. And that is something that the NAMI works against. And you can also find support there and get involved with helping people out. And it's a good advocacy group to look into. So check them out at NAMI.org, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And thank you for writing in and for being with us every week as Matt and I work out our hatred of certain cereals at each other. So that's going to do it for this week, I think, Matt. How we do? Did we do okay?
Yes, I'm seeing it in the stars. I'm looking up at the sky.
Written in the stars, a million miles away.
It says HQC.
Oh! Bye, everybody. Have a great week.
Yeah! Flash.